Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Folks, welcome to this incredible throwback edition of the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we talk to my friend, Kelt Jensen. He is literally the guy that wrote the book on trust in negotiation, and I love talking with him. He's just a wealth of knowledge. We talk all about the value of trust and how you can actually quantify trust in a negotiation. We talk about negotiating the negotiation, and while that sounds a little bit counterintuitive, it makes a ton of sense when you listen to how to actually negotiate the process of the negotiation and the agenda and all that kind of stuff. We talk all about how to develop trust quickly and how to recover if you lose trust in the negotiation. Fantastic conversation, as always. Enjoy this great episode. Hi, Kelt. How are you?
I am good. Thank you so much, Mark. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
I'm very excited to have a discussion with you because your specialty is all about behavioral economics and trust. But before we get into that discussion, I wonder if you could just share with the listeners a bit of a basic personal history and background and how you got to the point of being a negotiation instructor and professor.
Well, yes, I should probably take the short version, not to make it sad and boring for everybody. Very briefly, I started my career in technology, and I was heading a public company back in Scandinavia for a number of years. And suddenly one day I met a gentleman, a Swede, who in less than 2 hours convinced me that negotiation was critical and essential for both individual success and corporate success. And at that point, Mark, I was probably what I would call unconsciously incompetent within the field of negotiation because I thought I was good at it. And this is back in the late 90s. And, you know, when you're heading a corporation, you have a tendency to think that you're good at a lot of stuff. And one of them were negotiation. And I suddenly realized that was not the case. So anyway, I jumped ship and went into the consulting industry, assisting organizations, companies, governments, and whatever on their negotiations. And through that travel, through that world of negotiation, I realized that there was something essential that was actually missing in the world, and that was trust. So behavioral economics and trust has been something I've added to the world of negotiation that I just find is essential and that a lot of people are actually missing to focus on.
And this is what I find super interesting, because a lot of people, I think, take for granted trust in negotiations. Mm. Why is trust so important in negotiation?
Well, you could actually ask another question. That is, why is oxygen important for us to survive? it's something that is just required. Could you negotiate in a world without trust? Yes, you can. That is called zero sum. And I'm sure that a lot of your listeners, Mark, know the concept of zero sum. That basically means that one side is winning at the expense of the counterpart. So if you're in a tender process, or if you're just out in a commodity market, zero sum might be great. And I'm not necessarily saying that we should never use a zero sum approach into negotiation. But in that typical approach that is widely used, by the way, trust is not necessarily required. But if you move into longer relationship, partnership, or what I call its partnership, you definitely need a level of trust, because it's actually very basic. If you have a high level of trust, your transactional cost will go down and your profit will increase. But if you have between the parties negotiating a low level of trust, your transaction cost will go up and the profit will go down. So I actually call it trust currency, Mark, because we can actually measure the value of trust in a monetary value.
How do you measure the value of trust in monetary value?
That's a wonderful question. That's probably the question I'm getting the most. And I'm partly using it to provoke people, because very often when I'm doing a keynote, I talk about trust in relation to negotiation. I can see that people like thinking, oh, yeah, well, I guess that's pretty important. Then they kind of just drift off. But the second that you connect it to profit and success, then people wake up. And what we can just see, we've done a study in relation to one of my books where we looked at 3,500 negotiations globally. And we actually looked at negotiation where we could measure a very low level of trust. That means the parties did not open up, they didn't share information, they were perhaps even lying or bluffing. And then we measured it compared to negotiation where the parties were open without being naive, where they have a certain level of trust. And we could just see that the parties that actually had a focus on trust, consciously or unconsciously, came out financially way more successful than the parties who did not. Just read another thing, Mark, and that is when we talk about transactional costs, it actually makes sense at a very simple level. Because if you and I are negotiating and we don't trust each other, what is it that we do? Well, we have a tendency to throw in attorneys and lawyers and spend a lot of time on contract and security and backup plans and whatever we do. But if we have a very high level of trust, all of that is really not necessary because I trust what you're saying and you would trust what I'm saying. So the world is actually simple, and I don't want to sound naive, but you know, somebody might remember the good old days where, you know, a gentleman's word was his bond, right? So if we had promised each other something, that was what we would do.
So Kel, that brings up an interesting question. How do we, I mean, if we know that the higher the level of trust, the lower the transactional cost, and obviously that logically makes sense, how do we then pluck up the courage to put the required level of trust in the counterparty and have that counterparty put that level of trust into us so that we can get the value and the benefits out of trust?
Actually, I have a lot of different answers to that, but just to try and summarize the important part of it, one of the things we need to do is agree on what I call rules of the game. And this is actually very important, and I think that I see a lot of clients and corporations around the world that are missing. Look at a negotiation like two parties are meeting up, and one side view negotiation as playing chess, and the other side of the table are viewing negotiation like playing poker, right? You know, you're going to have a very interesting negotiation here because one side is sitting there trying to play chess, and the other side is sitting with cards trying to play poker. So even before we start negotiating, we have to negotiate on how to negotiate, because otherwise we may play two very different games. So one of the things I always introduce to all my clients is that we have to agree on how to negotiate. We have to agree, just to put it very simply, are we going to do serious sum? Are we going to do partnership? Are we going to do sponsorship? Are we going to do something completely different than that? And part of the rules of the game is actually verbalizing trust. So I meet people, Mark, who is actually afraid of raising the topic of trust. But what I'm saying is that even before we start negotiating, we have to discuss on how to negotiate. And part of that is actually trust and openness. Because if I was getting into a new negotiation with you, Mark, I would obviously ask you, are we going to be open with each other? Are we going to be trustworthy? Are we going to hold some information back? Is there something you can't tell me? Is there anything I can't tell you? And obviously, immediately doing that, I can kind of test the waters. I can feel, well, are you on board with my thinking, or are you going in completely different directions? And obviously, you know, you can drag the horse to the water, but you can't force it to drink. So are you sitting with a counterpart who won't do it, don't see the benefit, or don't have an interest? Well, obviously, you're not going down that road then. Then you're going to have a different route, and you're going to negotiate in a different way.
Interesting. I think one of the assumptions that we have about trust is that it takes a very long time to develop. And given that we have, some of us have short cycle times on the negotiations that we have to do, how do we develop trust in a short amount of time? Or maybe can we develop trust in a short amount of time?
Yeah, that's another great point, because I meet people who come to me and say, you know what, I get your point about smartnership and creating trust and trust currency and all of that. But given the time we have and how many negotiations we have per year, we just can't sit down there and try and develop all of that. And I actually agree, Mark. Trust takes time. I mean, you know, you and I can't step into a conference room, I shake your hand and say, Mark, I would like to have trust and openness. And you say, well, I'm okay with that. And then we trust each other. You know, that obviously is not the way the world works. Trust is not coming from words, is coming from actions. What helps, though, is back to what I said previously, that if we start verbalizing and talking about trust and not afraid of talking about trust, we can help the birth of trust a bit. What I would also recommend is that as we discuss trust and we discuss how to negotiate, we will also discuss more details on how we're going to exchange information. And, you know, if I'm going to tell you what is my cost of transportation, just to give you an example, we have to agree that when I tell you my cost of transportation, you might tell me your equal cost of transportation. And then we could figure out, you know, who has the lowest cost of transportation. And the one that has the lowest cost, obviously, is the one that has to take on that task. And the difference in between those two is what I've identified as necroeconomics, because that's the asymmetric value between the cost or the benefit between two parties. Now, when we talk about necroeconomics and asymmetric values, trust is essential, because obviously we cannot gain that openness, we cannot share that information, we cannot create the value if we haven't got trust in each other. So trust is basically coming from exchanging information. And if I, within the first, let's say, 30 minutes in a negotiation, have exchanged a number of values and costs with you, you know, we will slowly build one brick on top of the other, and we will start to trust each other more, because we have proven to each other that we are willing and happy to exchange that information.
So, and I find this concept really interesting as well. So what I'm hearing you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, the way that we can develop trust in a short amount of time is by openly sharing information with each other that's going to be mutually beneficial to both of us. Is that
exactly
correct?
That's one way of doing it. And then, you know, that's kind of the rational approach into it. Then comes behavioral economics, because then we have what I call the gut feeling. Because I'm sure, Mark, you have tried to step into a meeting in your life, and the counterpart that is sitting on the other side of the conference table, you just get that gut feeling that you don't like that person. I'm sure you tried that, because most people have, right? And, you know, it's really hard to pass that initial feeling. If you meet somebody you really don't like, and perhaps you get a strong feeling immediately, you don't trust that person either. You know, then I can preach forever. I can preach for months and weeks and years, and that will not change your mind that you're not willing and able to trust that person. And that is obviously very often behavioral economics and irrational behavior. But I mean, we can't just walk away from that and say, well, that's just BS, because it's not. It's a feeling. And when we negotiate, obviously, it is an emotional process. So we have to respect that as well. So it's not all down to just scientific data and, okay, we have agreed the rules of the game, and here we go, now we trust each other.
Right. So let's just say, for example, we're in a negotiation, and you get that feeling about me, for example, that you're, and I can sense that you have that feeling about me. How do I then work to demonstrate trustworthiness to you?
Well, if you are a brave gentleman, you would actually raise that topic. You would basically call for a break, timeout in the negotiation. If we are a team on each side of the table, I would basically ask the head of the two teams to step outside, so, you know, they're not talking or having this talk in front of the other team members. Then I would step outside and then have this kind of intimate discussion that is not related to the content of the negotiation, but basically it's all about that one side might feel that trust is dropping and why that might be the case. So basically, back to what I said earlier, we start discussing the rules of the game instead of discussing the content of the negotiation. Because I'm sure, Mark, I know you are a professional in this field as well, and so often I see that negotiations that otherwise could have been very successful actually just drowns in not the content, because the people couldn't reach an agreement, but basically drowns and just smashes into the fact that the people can't figure out how to reach that agreement, or they can't figure out negotiating with each other. So once in a while, we actually have to step outside that box, that negotiation, that game we're sitting in, and then actually just talking about how we're going to do this. That might help an actual situation like that.
Isn't that interesting? And so what I'm hearing is that if you're willing to be vulnerable enough to bring up the topic of, say, you know, it appears as though there seems to be some trust issues in this discussion. How do we move this forward, given that that appears to be that way? That opens up the discussion to trust, but it does take courage to bring that up.
Absolutely, it does. And it also requires that you have agreed already before you start negotiating the main rules of the game that you are able and willing to do that. So the parties have to agree on that because, you know, if you haven't discussed that and you suddenly just throw that out there, then you might confuse the counterpart. And it could even create a reduction in trust if you start doing that because the counterpart could actually feel that you're trying to work with a hidden agenda, you're attacking their profile or their approach into negotiation. So, you know, it could be taken up, and it could actually be perceived as a negative thing if you haven't agreed it beforehand that you want to do that.
Interesting. So what happens if we lose, like we're in a negotiation and for whatever reason, we lose the other party's trust. Mm-hmm. How do we do damage control to try and rebuild that to get the deal back on the tracks?
That happens a lot. I mean, as we started off saying, trust is really essential. You know, there was just in Switzerland a couple of months ago, there was the World Economic Forum meeting. And one of the essential conclusions that came out of that meeting this year was that trust is a key issue in the world. And I was actually happy to witness that, Mark, not because I'm happy that trust is actually on a decline, but I was happy because we have world leaders now, both in the corporate world and in the political world, that acknowledge that trust is an issue. Now, obviously, they talked about it at a governmental level or a big corporation level, but trust is really down to do we trust each other and other people? So in negotiation, I have felt for years that trust is really not something that a lot of professional negotiators actually been thinking about. It was just something that was there or wasn't there or kind of, you know, were there. And you know, I usually say that either you have trust or you don't. It's the same as walking up to a woman who's pregnant and then you ask her, are you pregnant? And then she says, oh, just a tiny bit. I mean, that's not the answer you're going to get, is it? I mean, either you are pregnant or you're not. Either you have trust or you have no trust. Back to your original question, what do we do if there is a loss of trust in a negotiation from one side? Well, once again, we have to try and create it. So with the risk, again, of sounding a bit naive, I may be the one that opens up. I may be the one sharing my cost of capital or my transportation or warehouse or whatever, because very often, and this is actually very, very important, very often I have seen in my career that if one side is perceived to be open and honest and sharing, we very often get the counterpart to mirror that behavior. But if you and I step into negotiation and are closed off, not sharing information, might even be perceived as bluffing or lying, we're going to get the exact same response from the counterpart. You know what, Mark? I honestly believe that human beings are basically good. I mean, I honestly believe that very few of us want to lie on purpose. I believe very few of us actually want to cheat the counterpart on purpose. But in a negotiation, it just happens sometimes because, back to what I said, we feel the counterpart is trying to cheat us. And then we feel, okay, if they're trying to do that, then we should probably cheat them before they cheat us. And that's why we go down that route. I like to tease people, Mark. So sometimes, you know, when I'm sitting with a client that I catch cheating or lying or bluffing or holding back information, I'm actually asking them, was that the way your parents raised you? And I know for 99.9% of everybody on the face of the globe, that was not the way we were raised. You know, I'm pretty sure, Mark, your parents told you to be honest, don't lie. And, you know, the typical story, and my parents told me the same thing. And I've just been wondering for years, why is it that all that all that teaching we got as kids, how come that just goes away the second we step into a real negotiation? And then I just want to add one more thing, Mark, and that is that without turning this into a very religious podcast, then I would say there's a wonderful quote, not only in the Bible, but in the 13 biggest religions in the world, that actually says, you should only do to others what you would like others to do to you. Call the golden rule. I'm sure a lot of your listeners actually know that one. And I really love to recommend that to my clients. I mean, step into negotiation and only ask, demand, or require something of the counterpart that you would be okay having them ask of you. And you know what's interesting, Mark? We actually try to measure this, and we can see that negotiators who consciously or unconsciously are using the golden rule are actually more successful than people who are just very selfish, egocentric negotiate, you know. And to me, that is actually very exciting as well, that In most cases, trust and openness actually reward you compared to the one that is holding back and don't want to share anything.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. And so what your research is showing that the more that you're able to trust someone, the lower the transactional cost, the higher the potential profit, and the higher the reward for both parties that are going to be negotiating.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I have to bring a warning, though, and that is we should never become naive. I mean, I would never recommend anybody stepping into a negotiation and just start sharing their costs and values and whatever without making sure that the counterpart understand what we're doing and are on board with that philosophy. Because if you are in what I call smartnership, which means openness and sharing information and try to utilize the value between the parties, if you are into that approach and the counterpart might be in zero sum, you are going to lose, Mark. So obviously it's very important we don't become naive, but we try and work with trust in a sensible way.
Listeners, I have a great deal for you today to save 30% and join Canada's supply chain community in Montreal from May 29th through 31st at the 2019 Supply Chain Management Association National Conference. Here's the deal. Non-members will receive 1 year membership when you register for the conference, plus you will get an additional 15% off the early bird non-member rate. The SCMA is celebrating 100 years. And it's kicking off the next 100 with this conference called Intelligent Supply Chains. The speaker faculty is outstanding. There's a keynote from Tom Sackey. He's the founder and CEO of TerraCycle. He recently presented at Davos. We've got Ramesh Chikala. He's the Senior Vice President of International Supply Chain and Food Manufacturing at Walmart, plus many other experts, great sessions, industry panels, amazing networking, and the SCMA Fellows Awards Gala. Remember that the SCMA is a not-for-profit, and it's dedicated to supporting its members through education, advocacy, and by offering the most coveted designation in supply chain, the SCMP. Space is filling up, so act quickly to reserve your spot. Use the following promo code, SCMAPODCAST. When you register at scma.com, 100 years is worth celebrating. And now, back to your show. Which goes back to your earlier comment about making sure that you're setting up the negotiation, or at least discussing how to negotiate with the other party prior to going in. Because if you're not aligned on values and sharing and trust and all that kind of stuff, then you know that you shouldn't be obviously as open as you'd like to be.
Yeah. How do you feel about that, Mark? We have colleagues in our field. How would you feel if you stepped into a negotiation and started off asking your counterpart, we just have to agree on how to negotiate? Would that feel awkward, do you think? Or do you think your counterpart would react in a weird way and look at you like you are just arrived from another planet?
I think that negotiating the negotiation, or at least negotiating the process of negotiation, is actually essential to ensuring that you get a good result at the end. Because not only are you creating a situation where you're aligning interests, you're aligning how things are going to happen, but you're also aligning on process so that you don't necessarily talk about things that don't need to be talked about, but you also move things forward that are most important, or potentially sequence your discussion to something that's mutually beneficial.
Mm. But I don't know whether you have the same experience, Mark, but working globally, regardless where I might be and with what organization or industry or whatever, I see so few people spending that time, you know, to agree on how to negotiate. They just dive into it, you know, not really considering the framework and all of the things we just touch upon.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. And what's funny, I find, is that the more time that you spend up front preparing the negotiation, the faster the negotiation actually becomes. When people think it's the opposite for some reason. They actually just start negotiating because they're in such a rush to complete the negotiation that they do no preparation or planning or discussion with the counterparty prior to the negotiation. And what ends up happening if they do that is they just waste so much time on the back end.
Oh yeah, I completely agree. When I introduce these ideas for clients, they very often initially say, but you know, we don't really have time to do all of that. And I say, well, you don't have time not to do it, because you're going to waste so much time, as you were saying, Mike, afterwards, if we haven't actually cleared that before we get started. And you know, I just called a very important thing, obviously, you mentioned right then, that's the preparation part, even before you meet the counterpart. And what you obviously, as a negotiator, have to plan out before meeting the counterpart is, do I actually want to be open? Which of the variables that I want to negotiate do I want to be open about? Is there any of them I don't want to be open about? How do I make sure that I get some information back when I'm releasing some information to the counterpart? And very importantly, how do I ask the right questions? I mean, these are kind of very, very simple tools. But again, it's something that I see so many negotiators are completely forgetting.
Yeah. And, you know, I find a lot of people get confused about the idea of concessions. They think of concessions as, you know, risk items, or they think of concessions as monetary items. But you can make concessions and trades based on information as well. Yeah. And so many people think that it's just limited to risk, or it's just limited to financials, mm-hmm. when in fact, if you're going to be making a concession based on information, make sure that you're getting an equal or greater concession from the other party at the same time, to ensure that trust stays maintained.
Absolutely. Now, I don't want your audience to think I'm weird, Mark, but when I was a kid, and I'm not doing it anymore, let me just emphasize that, but when I was a kid, I was playing the game with other kids, you know, I will show you mine if you will show me yours, right? That's a typical kids game. I'm basically using that, because that's what I would like negotiators to do today. You should not be unilateral concession orientated and just walk into negotiations.
That's right.
My cost of capital is this, and my benefit of this, and this will give me that, and whatever. I should be willing and able to release that information to you if you at the same time are willing to release your counter information to me. That's how I really see negotiation. And I sometimes find that people get confused in a negotiation when negotiation actually starts. And in my world, negotiations don't even necessarily start in the beginning of the actual negotiation, because that's kind of a teamwork where we're just trying to figure out, where would we have cost and benefits? How can we work together? Have we got the trust? How is the relationship? What are we going to do? So on and so forth. And when we have created that value, that pot of potential value on the table, then negotiation kicks in, because obviously then you and I have to agree how we're going to split that value we potentially created. And, you know, that could end up in what I call a zero-sum game.
Yeah, totally agree with you. Keld, if you were going to leave the listeners with a few things that they can do to improve their trust-building skills, what mm-hmm. would they be?
Well, a very simple one is actually starting just being aware of trust. Again, as I've been saying several times, I find lots of negotiators who don't really consider trust as an essential tool in a negotiation. They don't consider trust as being an important part of the success of a negotiation. So actually, very often when I'm doing a keynote, I use a very simple example on how we can value trust. I may pick up a simple plastic bottle of water, actually two of them that are completely identical. And then I go to a person in the audience and ask this person the following. Could you imagine that you're a procurement officer and you're buying this stand-up plastic bottle of water from a supplier, and you have had a relationship with that supplier for, let's say, 5 or 6 years. You trust the person, you like him, everything is going according to plan, so you're happy with that agreement. And you might be buying millions of those bottles every year. Now, what happens in this case is suddenly there's a competitor that arrives on the market and offer you the exact same bottle of water. But as I was kind of making fun of earlier, you get a gut feeling with that new supplier that you don't really like the person, don't trust him, you don't have the same sense of humor. Again, as I said, exactly the same product. And the challenge for you right now is that the new supplier that you don't like and don't trust is actually 1% cheaper than the one you've been working with for 5 or 6 years that you like and you trust. And my question now, Mark, to that person in the audience is, who would you continue with? Now, I can promise you that 99% of everybody will say, well, I will go with the one I like and I trust. And then I say, okay, what if the price difference is 3%? And very typically, the person will say, well, I will still go with the one I trust and I like. And you can obviously see where this small experiment is going, right? And sometimes we know we go all the way up to 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, sometimes even 30 or 32% before a person actually say, nope, you know what? Now the difference is too big. Now we'll change to the one that is cheaper, giving me the same product, even though I don't like and trust them. And that is my point. We can actually put a value on trust because if we are buying similar products, we will buy from the one we like and trust, even though that person might be more expensive, it's because we can actually put a value on it. Now, I was just talking about a very simple, stupid product like a bottle of water, right? Could you imagine that we are talking about something that is way more advanced or complex technology or long-term relationship or whatever it might be? Then that price difference actually increases. And there's a wonderful gentleman, an Israeli-American professor that I'm sure a lot of your audience knows, Dr. Daniel Kahneman, who won a Nobel Prize in Behavioral Economics.
Yes.
And he basically won that award. Obviously, it's way more complicated, but he basically won the award because he's out there claiming that people are deep down irrational. That means we buy with emotions, and then later on, we add the fact to prove that our emotional decision was absolutely right. I believe in what he's saying 200% because I see that every single day. Now, is it irrational to put a price on trust? No, I don't think so. And imagine just for a second that it's actually rational behavior to be irrational. I know it sounds a bit crazy, but what if we actually make a lot of our decisions based on emotions, which trust obviously is, and thereby actually get a better deal? Who knows? So anyway, my advice would be, that was a long answer to your very simple question, but my advice would be just start thinking about trust, start capitalizing on trust, start thinking about how can you create trust with a counterpart, and equally important, how can you actually start trusting other people? Because, you know, it's very, very difficult to change people in this world, isn't it? There's really only one person that you can start on. And as everybody knows, that's basically yourself, right? We can't change everybody else. So we have to start changing the world one by one, and that one is ourselves. And we have to get back, not to become naive, but just creating more trust, and then have to start with you and me and everybody listening to the show.
Fantastic. Really, really good advice and really, really good conversation, Kel. Thank you so much for being on the show. And if people want to find out more about you and what you do, how do they do that?
Well, obviously, I published a number of books. The latest one is called, strangely enough, Honest Negotiation. That is available through Amazon and all bookstores everywhere in the world. YouTube has a lot of videos where I discuss this topic. They can go to my website, which is very simple, keljensen.com, and read additional stuff about it. So there's actually a lot of free resources out there that people can tap into. And if anybody might have questions about this field, I am happy to give any possible answer to whatever they might not be out there, because it's a very exciting mission I'm on, and it is definitely a mission where we can improve the way that we collaborate.
I love it. Fantastic. And for the listeners, just so that you know, I'll make sure to link out to Kel's website so that you have access to that information and find his new fantastic book. Kel, again, thank you so much for being on the show. I sincerely appreciate it. It was a wonderful discussion.
Thank you for inviting me, Mark.
Hey friends, thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go onto iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.